is Edris Wise, side six, speaking with Fannie Cohen, Pittsburgh Council of, National Council of Jewish Women, Pittsburgh section, for the Oral History Project. Fannie, we were talking about travel and about your trip to Israel. You've been to Europe. What has been your impressions of being in Europe?
Well, my last trip to Europe was just a year or so ago, and that again, I was on my own. I went to Vienna and Hungary and Wiesbaden, Germany, and 5 days in a ship on the Blue Danube, which isn't blue. And that, I did have a traveling companion, a very good friend, that also was under the sponsorship of the University of Pittsburgh. The Germans looked like Germans and acted like Germans. And a lot of them couldn't speak English, but I spoke Yiddish to them.
Uh-huh.
And made it known that I was Jewish. I don't have very much Yiddish, but the Yiddish that my parents spoke when I was a little girl kind of stayed with me, and I was able to communicate that way. The Viennese, I thought Vienna was a wonderful city. It's especially for someone who loves music. I mean, every street sign has a composer's name on it, and there's something in the air in Vienna which is very exciting as far as the music is concerned. The people there are German in a way, but looser, and a little different temperament than I thought that the, like in Wiesbaden, which is a very German city.
Did you encounter any anti-Semitism?
Not really, although I think there might have been some of the concierge in some of the hotels we felt were aware of, had a certain amount of anti-Semitism. But I can't say really, I can't point to anything really, because we were with a group that was mixed group.
Mm-hmm.
And with a marvelous guide who took very good care of us. So I know I can't say that I encountered any. Now with the Pittsburgh Symphony, I was in Europe many years ago, in France and Switzerland and Germany and Spain. And then on another trip, went to Japan. And that also included some stops in northwestern United States and Alaska. But those were groups, those are trips with the Pittsburgh Symphony that my husband went on.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I was subject to their itinerary and all the comforts that their planning provided. I had no responsibility for myself, really.
As a single woman now, what is your social life like in Pittsburgh?
I would say that as a single woman, it's quite good. I must say that I have to reach out to other people in order to have them reach back to me.
But do you find there's a lot here for you to do?
Oh, there is very much for me to do. If I were not quite so busy professionally, I could do could attend many more public events. As it is, I have to limit public events to the theater and music, but there are many other things that I could possibly do if I had the time to go out and do them. I still have friends, some single, some in my position, some married, but I still have quite a good circle of friends.
In your goings-on in the city of Pittsburgh, have you encountered any anti-Semitism?
No, I don't think so. There was only one time when I really felt that. It was many years ago when I worked for the Pittsburgh Symphony. And during the war years, which is long ago, it was very difficult to find places to live. And at that time, the Pittsburgh Symphony was importing a lot of musicians, particularly some from Europe. And one of my duties was to try to find places for them to live. And that was the first time, I think, in my whole life that I really felt, when questions would be asked, that I really felt that there was an anti-Semitism.
What kind of questions?
Well, are they Jewish? Or they'd ask, what's the name? You know, the kinds of questions that they ask. Sometimes they might not want to come out. What's the name? What do they do? Where do they come from? Leading questions that would make you realize that they were searching for the kind of answer that they wanted.
Do you ever find this among the players, for instance, in a symphony orchestra?
No, never. I don't think you ever do. Musicians are a special breed. And I think that there's a mixture of religions, of races, of ages. I mean, a 20-year-old musician can be a pal with a 65-year-old musician because of what they have in common. And no, I don't think there's any of that.
What about during your summer vacations?
Well, I spend my summers at Chautauqua, New York, which is a lovely lakeside community.
We touched on that before, and I know that it was a Methodist retreat originally.
Right. The first, when I went there first year in 1940, there were three Jewish families other than the musicians. The ones in the Chautauqua Symphony, there were Jewish musicians. But other than that, there were three Jewish families. I personally didn't feel any anti-Semitism, but I knew it was there from other experiences.
Can you give us a for instance about the other experiences?
Again, when other people would look for housing, they would be asked certain questions that would indicate that they perhaps were not welcome. Also, occasionally one would hear a remark that was made without the knowledge that, for instance, I was Jewish. And the remark would be made, as remarks are often made. And but it was not a constant thing with me. I would see all the white-haired ladies with the pearl earrings that were going to the Methodist Church, and I didn't look upon them as Christians. I just looked upon them as people. I just didn't pay any attention to the fact of what they were. So I didn't really feel it. I always was able to get accommodations for myself and never had any problems.
Has that changed over the years?
Oh, yes. Now there are... the Jewish population of Chautauqua is... I don't know what the percentage is, but it's very great. And the Jewish people are people who very much appreciate all the cultural activities that Chautauqua has to offer. And they're very responsive to the lecturers who come there and the all the music too.
We had mentioned before, we're talking about Judaism and ideas. We talked briefly about your son Carl and the fact that he is single, and you made a darling little plea for a nice Jewish wife for him.
Did I? Okay. I'll repeat that again.
Well, I'd like to ask you a little more about that with the way things are going today and the percentages of intermarriage. I'd kind of like to get your feelings on that, living in 1983 and growing up a little bit differently than the children are growing up today with their ideas and thoughts. How do you feel about your son?
Do you want my reaction?
Your reaction to your son marrying out of the Jewish faith, or if he would?
I would say that I would like him to marry within the Jewish faith. I happen to think that Jewish people are very special. And that's where I think that, and I think that's what I would like for my son. As to how I would react if he didn't, I don't know. I don't think he would choose an Irish girl or an English girl. He might choose an Italian girl or a Greek girl or somebody with closer temperament than a Mediterranean temperament. Maybe I'm just saying that because I often think silently, what's my next best choice? All right, my next best choice is a Greek girl or an Italian girl. Because in both of those situations, they have a temperament, they're Mediterranean countries, they have a temperament that's more like the Jewish people. They're very strong on family considerations. And they're very warm people. And I think Jewish people are very warm and have great hearts. And of course there are a lot of exceptions to that. I shouldn't really make such generalizations. I should take that off the record, but I won't. There are lots of exceptions to that. But I'm just thinking about how... But of course, I'm thinking about what appeals to me. But I think my son would feel pretty much the same way. I think he likes people with a lot of warmth and who respond a lot.
Have your expectations of him changed since Sydney passed away? Do you feel that you're depending upon him more, or do you want him to be around more often?
I had made up my mind on the basis of other friends who had gone through the same situation that I must not, under any circumstances, make Carl feel that I am dependent on him. I didn't do anything special to push him away, but I certainly didn't make him feel that he had to be by my side. I think at the beginning that he felt the loss of his father a great deal and needed more of me at the time. But I didn't try to take advantage of that. Let's put that. I tried to keep the whole thing in the right perspective. And as time went on, he found his way away from me, and which I didn't neither encourage nor discourage. It just our lives worked out that way, and I didn't try to pull him back to me at all.
Do you see him a lot?
I don't see him a great deal. Maybe once a week, maybe twice a week. Sometimes several weeks go by and I don't see him. Of course, we're on telephone.
So there isn't the Friday night ritual of coming over for dinner once a week.
No, nothing like that. Mm-mm. We don't have any, first of all, he's a lawyer and he's never sure when he's going to have to work at night, so he can't have any rituals anyway. He does come, has spent every summer of his life at Chautauqua, and he still likes to come back there for weekends and sometimes for a week at a time, and so we get to see each other then, but he goes his own way. Fortunately, I've had a very full life of my own so that I haven't had to depend on my son to provide, take me out to dinner, he does, of course, but to feel that he's got to provide any of my social life at all.
Do you feel safe walking around without a male escort?
I feel
or
safe
even just with a group
walking
of women?
Walking around, I feel unsafe even walking with a male escort these days.
Traveling also?
Depends on where you are. Now, when I was in Vienna, we walked from the opera house back to hotel 11:30 at night. There was no problem. I mean, no, we didn't even think about it. It depends on where you are. But in the United States, I absolutely feel unsafe anywhere, even with a male escort.
Do you travel a lot in the United States?
I don't know what you mean by a lot, but I've gone to Florida almost every year. I've gone to Arizona, Connecticut. Well, I guess I've done maybe take two or three trips a year.
My point is that you don't just sit at home, that you do get up and go and whenever you want.
I absolutely do go. My job is such as part-time, and I have to make a lot of preparation and think ahead when I go away, but I do go. I know I certainly don't stay at home at all. I have felt from the very beginning that I did not want to join the world of widows, let me put it that way. And I had to make a real effort from the very beginning to stay away, falling into that kind of easy trap. Fortunately, my professional life helped a great deal. I always kept busy during the day. I was never one to do social things during the day. So this kept me from running around with doing the kinds of things that a lot of women do during the day that to me seem...
Like what?
Like just passing time. Just passing time. Maybe they get a lot of pleasure out of it, I don't know. But I have to do things... I've always been a busy woman. But I have to do things that give me gratification and satisfaction. I just can't get up in the morning and feel that my day hasn't got a meaning to it. Some kind of meaning.
Well, you're a very organized woman.
Oh, I think I am. So, I don't know.
Are there any things that you would like to cover that we haven't touched upon?
Well, I don't know. You girls have done a great job of asking me all kinds of questions. You've been very good on your interviewing, because good questions get good answers, if my answers indeed have been good.
Oh, they have been. We've been very pleased. Can you think of any anecdotes about the people that you have entertained in your home? The famous people, so that many, maybe years from now, when someone knows, heard that, for instance, Isaac Stern passed through Pittsburgh or spent some time here, and they're doing a project on Isaac Stern, something that maybe happened at Fanny Cohen's house would give a little insight into Isaac Stern's personality, or anyone else for that matter.
Well, I think we've entertained Isaac Stern more than almost any other artist. He's an extraordinary person, loves to eat.
You showed us that Christmas card that he sends, and I felt that ritual, which is really what it is, was very interesting, and I'd like you to explain that.
Well, as a matter of fact, I was re-looking over some of the pictures again this morning. Each year they send a greeting at Christmas time with a picture of their family. And it's not just a picture of two people or four people or whatever it is. It started out originally with two of their children. And then each year they would send another picture showing their growth or where they had been. For instance, they were all in China. When I don't know whether you're aware that Isaac Stern did this movie in China. And they were all in China. And one of the pictures was China. And one time they were in Israel. And that picture was of them in Israel. And I have them, really, I could document the Stern family, their growth, not from the very beginning, because I didn't know them all that time, but for many, many years. And I have kept them all. Isaac always was a marvelous guest, because he was such an interesting man. One of the few great artists who had so many other, involved in so many other activities. I can remember, and I honestly don't know exactly what the circumstances were. It was in some crisis with Israel, a war, or some serious situation. And usually I had big parties, but that night I think there were about 10 or 12 of us seated around the dining room table. And Isaac Stern had just come from a conference with Golda Meir. And he sat here for an hour and told us about it, and we were all absolutely mesmerized. It was, first of all, he's a fascinating speaker. And he had such wonderful things, such a wonderful way of transmitting. Of course, some of the things he couldn't tell us that were absolutely confidential. But now that's the kind of, he's a wonderful storyteller, marvelous, marvelous verbal person.
What about Fritz Reiner?
Fritz Reiner, we never had at a big party. We used to have him at some small dinners. And I don't know that he ever did anything there were never that many people, well, maybe be six or eight people. He was, I don't even know how to describe Fritz Reiner. He was always a good guest. He was Hungarian, he's European, he's European people. European people are always very polite and...
Well, did he show a different personality socially than when he was in front of the symphony orchestra?
To an extent. There was still a kind of a stern way about him that was not a giving kind of, not an outward kind of, outgoing kind of personality. That's the word I'm looking for. He was stern in connection with the orchestra, but always, as I say, very polite and friendly. Because when you're a guest in your house.
What about Steinberg?
Oh, Steinberg was wonderful. Steinberg was really a marvelously friendly man. Again, you always knew that he was not one of your buddies. Let's put it that way. But he was a very polite, fine man, and very, very friendly and nice to everybody, always.
Did he identify with the Jewish community at all? I know that he
you mean in Pittsburgh?
In Pittsburgh, that he played with the, or he conducted the Israeli Symphony, I think, before
yeah,
he
well,
came to
yes,
Pittsburgh.
He did. He was one of the founders of the Palestine, or was one of the, either the founder or an early conductor of the Palestine Symphony at that time. I don't think he identified himself particularly with the Jewish community here as such, but he certainly was a Jew, and his wife was, indeed. As a matter of fact, I think her ashes were taken back to Israel. I think that was her wish.
Right.
I'm quite sure. She was a lovely, lovely lady.
Can you tell us anything about Pinky Zukerman? That's Pincus Zukerman to most people. I know, I've heard you refer to him as Pinky.
Well,
I use that liberty.
Well, marvelous, marvelous. You talk about, I mentioned Israelis before. This is a typical, I mean, Pinky is like the Israelis are like Pinky, which he is. Marvelous personality, lots of fun. And my husband had a great sense of humor. And if Pinky was a guest and he had a conversation with my husband, that was the whole evening. I mean, outside of the eating, that was the whole evening, because they had such a dialogue between them that it was like going to a show. It was really wonderful. Lots and lots of fun. He had a great sense of humor.
Roberta Peters?
Roberta Peters is still and was a lovely, lovely lady. Warm and friendly, and
did she know Carl?
I have a picture of her holding Carl when he was about 2 years old, when she happened to be at Chautauqua, and I show it to him every once in a while, but you know, young people are, you know, so what, but anyway, I do have, yeah, she knew Carl, she knew him, she has some lovely boys of her own now who are grown, but she and my husband were great friends. Yes, she knew Carl all right.
Well, I remember when we were in Chautauqua one time, we went backstage to see her. And Carl seemed very reticent because he hadn't seen her for a long time.
Yeah.
And when she saw him, she hugged him, kissed him, and was so glad to see him and remembered him. And
yeah.
And it was very
well,
warm.
She had a long and lovely relationship with my husband. And because of the professional life, but she's still singing. It's amazing. She's still singing. But there, she's really a fine lady, and of course is.
When Andre,
Jan Pierce was another one. When Jan Pierce came here, he came here because he sang with a little radio orchestra here.
Here in Pittsburgh.
In Pittsburgh. This was on many, many years ago. And he would only eat kosher food. And I had a terrible time making sure that I got kosher food and that everything was kosher for him. He came here once with his wife, too. I can remember once that I got into trouble, so all I served, I think, was Blintzes and Lux. I can't remember. I can't remember the circumstances. Either the butcher shop was closed or it was a last-minute thing, and all I could get was dairy food, take care of Jan Pierce, but he's only ate kosher food. Now, we saw him many, many times because he appeared regularly on this program and came to Pittsburgh.
Was Sidney involved with the hiring of Andre Previn?
No, not at all. No, that was not his area at all. I think that musicians all expressed their feelings about the different Andrew Previn came here as a guest conductor along with other people.
What was your impression when you first met him?
Well, I really first met him right in this house because, did I tell you the story? Okay. And I had an impression of this.
You can repeat it.
I had the impression of being a very friendly, nice man who was a wonderful guest and a marvelous guest insofar as the other guests were concerned, because he talked to everybody and made everybody feel very comfortable and would discuss families and the kinds of things that people would feel free to talk about. It'd come easy. Mm-hmm. The kinds of conversations that come easy to most people.
Do you have any anecdotes that you could tell about
him? Not about Previn, no. I have a long story about Piotr Gorsky's wife, which is kind of interesting. She never came to Pittsburgh with him, but just this one time and came here for a party. She was a great chess expert. I don't know whether she was a Rothschild. She was a great chess expert. I think my son Carl was about 7 or 8 years old and had learned to play chess. And he was in his bedroom. I guess he woke up during the party. And Carl Kritz, who was assistant conductor at the time, was also a chess player. And my Carl had learned how to play chess. So Carl Cohen played chess with Carl Kritz on his bed in the back room. Up until that moment, Mrs. Piatigorsky hardly spoke to anybody. It was a big buffet, and there were chairs where she could have sat down, but I think she stood in the dining room, kind of in the corner, hardly speaking to anybody. All of a sudden, she heard about this chess game going on in Carl's bedroom between Carl Cohen and Carl Kritz. She went back there, and it was like her personality changed completely, and that's where she stayed the rest of the evening. It was the most interesting change. I mean, she was a really handsome, big, attractive woman, but Ned didn't say a word. Finally, that was it, because she was a very prominent, wonderful chess player, and that was her real strength. Oh, yes. Yes, she was known for that.
What kind of food did you serve at your parties, Fanny?
Everything. Well, traditionally, musicians are hungry after they play. Traditionally, most musicians don't eat very much before a concert. You talked before about Friday night dinners. Ours was usually scrambled eggs or whatever, or a salad or something. But traditionally, they're always hungry after a concert. So we had rather elaborate buffets, even though not all our guests were musicians. Soloists especially, they really want to be fed. I mean, you have to get them something substantial. I can't imagine any of the big soloists, unless they ate, let's say, in the mid-afternoon. They're always hungry. So I would have everything from hot hors d'oeuvres to cold hors d'oeuvres to roast beef.
Did you do most of the cooking yourself?
In the early years, I did. But then, after a while, I couldn't. When it got to be 30 and 40 people, I had to have catering. And the only thing... Have I mentioned my chopped liver before?
No.
The only thing, Fanny's famous. That's one of my best recipes. I'd almost...
Can we have it?
Can you have it? Yes. Yes, if you promise to follow it exactly. I think Edris has eaten.
It's delicious. It really is out of this world.
But that would be something I would make, even if it was catered, I'd make a few things that were... Well, as a matter of fact, people got to... I usually served my hors d'oeuvres on this desk right here. And if there was no chopped liver... They would miss it because everybody expected when they came in to find a chopped liver on the table. But I really had very good luck with caterers. We always had lovely, lovely food. There were wonderful, many, many wonderful evenings. When we entertained the Parades, Paul Paray and his wife, Yolanda was his wife's name, she insisted on bringing the wine, and this was like for 30 people. And I said, well, that's very nice of you, but you really don't have to. And he was very fussy about his wine. And she brought some a certain red wine, which to this day I still use as a red wine And I call it Paul Perret wine. If anybody asks me what kind of wine it is, I say it's Paul Perret wine. He always loved the certain kind of a wine.
We're coming to the end of the tape, but can you think of anything else?
No, I don't see anything here.
Fanny is looking over the list that she has compiled of all the people whom she has entertained, which will be in our files.
I think we were one of the first people to entertain Itzhak Perlman when he came to Pittsburgh. And even when he first came, he was not married. He came with his mother. And we're up on the second floor, and he had to come up the steps to get up here, and he did.
On his crutches.
On his crutches, yes, indeed.
Oh, my.
Of course, since then, I don't think we ever entertained him here after that.